Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I am Joe McCormick. And today we are returning with part two in our series on The Telephone Game, a children's game in which a secret message is passed along from one player to the next in a chain until finally the original message and the message that emerges at the end are both announced so everybody can see how the information was either preserved faithfully or horribly mangled by the passing from mouth to ear so many times. Now, if you have not heard part one of this series, I think this is a case where you really should go back and check that one out first. We lay a lot of the groundwork for what we're talking about today in the first episode. But as a brief refresher, we talked about some of our memories of these games from childhood, and we also discussed a very famous and influential series of experiments from roughly a century ago, discussed in a book by the British experimental psychologist Frederick C. Bartlett called Remembering, A Study in Experimental and Social Psychology. That book came out in 1932. Now, the experiments described by Bartlett in this book concerned what is called serial reproduction, which is very similar to the telephone game, but involves a written component. So basically, a person would be given a text to read, and this could be anything. It could be a transcription of a folktale, it could be a newspaper article, a passage from a book, whatever. And then that person is allowed to read it several times, and then it's taken away, and then later they are asked to reproduce the text as accurately as they could from memory. Then that reproduction would be the text given to the next person in the chain, and they would do the best they could to reproduce that from memory, and so on down the chain for an arbitrary number of reproductions. Now, what Bartlett found in these experiments was that his text-based version of the telephone game in most cases produced radical, profound alterations to the original story or message. And to read from his conclusion of that chapter, quote, "Epithets are changed into their opposites. Incidents and events are transposed. Names and numbers rarely survive intact for more than a few reproductions. Opinions and conclusions are reversed. Nearly every possible variation seems as if it can take place, even in a relatively short series." So I wanted to begin today by following up on Bartlett's work, which we talked about in the last episode, because it cast a very long shadow in the study of memory and cultural transmission of information. But obviously, this book is from a very long time ago, so I wanted to see whether there were any more recent scientific reviews commenting on whether his work on serial reproduction has stood the test of time and or been successfully replicated. So I found a few papers. One was actually focused on Bartlett's repeated reproduction experiments. That's where the same person tries to recall a story or piece of information at different time intervals after being exposed to it, as opposed to the serial reproduction experiments where it's given from one person to the next. But this study did briefly address the other Bartlett experiments in the background section. This paper was, can Bartlett's repeated reproduction experiments be replicated by Bergman and Roediger in Memory and Cognition in 1999? And the authors say that, quote, serial reproduction can often lead to dramatic distortions in recall over repeated reconstructions of the event. Although rarely used now, this experimental technique was used in later studies with results generally confirming those of Bartlett. Psychologists interested in transmission of rumors use this technique, among others. And then I found another study from more recent years. This was from 2014 in the Journal of Applied Research in Memory and Cognition. By Roediger et al., called Bartlett Revisited, Direct Comparison of Repeated Reproduction and Serial Reproduction Techniques. And in their review, the authors say, in sum, virtually every experiment we can find using Bartlett's serial reproduction technique confirms his observations that social transmission of information is error-prone, and that the more links there are in the chain, the greater the probability of error. So putting all this together, it looks to me like subsequent research may have found some differences at the margins, but for the most part, Bartlett's findings about the telephone game process have been confirmed. When you do this particular type of experiment where one person gets to read a story and then they're supposed to repeat it as accurately as they can from memory, and you go on, all the different kinds of changes that we talked about in the last episode are introduced. Now, there might be some important caveats based on what the genre of the information is, and we can talk about that later in this episode. But for the most part, one of my big takeaways from this is we should all be very cautious about believing rumors. Even if you trust that the person directly sharing the information with you is not a liar, because this is something people always say when, you know, when you hear a rumor, people say like, oh, but Johnny, who told me this, isn't a liar. Why would he tell me this if it wasn't true?
Yeah, that's a good point. Though I think the only example of rumors that you should take to the bank, the only example is going to be, the 11th studio album by Fleetwood Mac, which absolutely holds up. No doubt about it.
That's just secondhand news.
There's also a track, you also have The Chain on there. So I don't know, take that into account.
I do love Fleetwood Mac, but I got to ding them for a false meteorological fact that they perpetuate in one of their songs. The statement that thunder only happens when it rains, that is not true.
Yeah, absolutely incorrect. But to your point, yeah, the that's a good point on rumors, sort of the dark side of this this phenomenon. I really like the idea of the storytelling element and the chain of storytellers within a given oral storytelling tradition. Or what have you? Like it just it made me rethink and reanalyze the role of the storyteller in a given culture. You know that with each transmission of this story, you may lose so many great things, but you also may gain things. It's going to introduce new ways to make this content more agreeable with an audience, more beneficial to the audience, more entertaining. Though at the same time, also opening it up to further manipulation so that the message of the story could also be misused.
Absolutely. I mean, this is noted, I think, by Bartlett himself, but also in many papers I was reading about this research. So the thing is that, yes, this should make us very skeptical of the objective accuracy of much of memory and of chains of information sharing between people, especially where the whole process cannot be reviewed with a fixed record. Because the crucial element of this here is that you only have to work with what the previous person told you. It's a totally different thing if, like, it's all done, maybe it's all done in writing or somehow it's all recorded and you can go back and review what the story was at each point in its history. But for this type of information sharing, yes, it should make us skeptical about objective accuracy in reproduction of the original. But this doesn't mean that the way people process information in serial transmission is bad. It just means that you shouldn't rely on it to get objective, accurate accounts. It may not be good for that purpose, but it's good for other things. It's great for creating culture, for enlivening art and narrative across time and making it always newly relevant, for maintaining friendship and social bonds, for teaching applicable lessons in everyday life. In fact, several papers I was reading pointed out that, in fact, this combination of conservation and distortion of information at the same time through transmission from person to person could be viewed as metaphorically similar to the combination of conservation and distortion in biological evolution. Life can only exist on Earth where there is the appropriate balance of conservation and distortion of genetic information. So genetic traits are heritable, and they're passed on from one generation of organisms to another. But species survive in a changing environment because they're able to adapt and evolve, and they're able to adapt and evolve when mutations, distortions of that genetic information, prove beneficial to them. Though it's interesting to note, I think, that the error rate is probably much higher in the transmission of most genres of verbal information than it is for genetic information in organisms. Like in life, accurate transmission of genes is the norm, and mutations are the exception. When we're telling stories to each other or repeating something we read in the newspaper to a friend, in that kind of verbal memory-based transmission, mutations are much more the norm. But at the same time, I think about how there is a higher survival tolerance there. Like a single harmful mutation can prove fatal to a bacterium. But how does that work in the analogy for transmitting information? Like, is it possible that one memory error could kill a piece of information and prevent it from spreading further?
I guess so. You know, like the example of the story of the ghost battle, the ghost warriors in the last episode. You know, like sometimes if certain details, certain descriptions, certain narrative choices are removed, like it can take the heart out of a particular story, a particular myth, and could impact the degree to which people want to pass it on or need to pass it on.
That's a good point. Yes, this thing that Bartlett noticed where certain details, this is he called the leveling process, where individualizing characteristics and stylistic details from a story are stripped out as they are reproduced by people who don't remember them because they deem them inessential, not realizing that the soul of the story lies in those details. The fact that those details are now missing could make the story so uninteresting to the person who hears it that they would never share it again. That's a good point. But wait a minute, I wanted to come back to something I started saying a minute ago, this thing about believing rumors, where people are often inclined to believe a rumor because they don't want to believe the individual person who shared the rumor with them is a liar. And I think that that is such a misguided mentality because, first of all, and less related to the experimental findings we're talking about here, the person who shared the rumor with you may not be a liar, but you know less about the person who shared the rumor with them and who that person heard it from, et cetera. You can't usually inspect the entire chain of transmission, only the person you're directly getting it from. But more relevant to today's topic, it's absolutely clear from these experiments that massive distortions of original source material can creep into human transmission chains, even when the person isn't a liar, when they're not trying to distort it, they're trying as best they can to accurately reproduce it. And that's in cases where the person is not personally invested in the subject matter, where they have no incentive to exaggerate, and they're just trying to reproduce the material as best they can. How much worse will things be in the real world? Will distortions be when, like, somebody is personally invested in the material, maybe in it presenting a certain way, when they do have incentives to exaggerate or otherwise distort the material, whether that's to maybe make it more entertaining, more impressive, more illustrative of a point they want to make or whatever, and when they're not necessarily conscious of being scrutinized for accuracy?
Yeah, so there are all these different types of unconscious changes, and of course, intentional changes that can take place. And the result is that some details in the story or the rumor or what have you, some will change, some will remain, and there will also be a sharpening of things, you know, like an exaggeration. What does it all mean? I was looking at a handful of papers discussing transmission chain experiments and the transmission of urban legends and other stories, which I thought seemed like a really good area to look at, because a lot of times urban legends, especially, I mean, we're not talking about literature, we're not talking about myths. They often kind of come out of nowhere, and the way in which we pass them on sometimes feels more akin to like older oral storytelling traditions.
Well, right, because the case with urban myths is you at least usually assume that they were created by many minds. You know, they're the product mm-hmm. of this transmission chain rather than, say, being originally written down in a fixed form by one person and then other people have tried to replicate it across time. Though, in right. fact, there are variations. Like, some urban legends do come from books. That's a funny thing that pops mm-hmm. up occasionally. Like, it was originally a story somebody wrote that was published in a sci-fi magazine somewhere, and then it got turned into an urban legend and morphed along the chain.
Yeah. And of course, speaking of the chain, we have to acknowledge the email chain. Technology changes things. Technology ends up bringing us a scenario where you end up with things like pasta, creepy pasta and so forth, where it's something that is, as the name alludes to, generally just copied and pasted. Though sometimes there are augmentations made. And then, of course, everyone has received it, or at least in times past, I don't know if this is still a thing so much, but when a family member forwards you an email and it has some sort of perhaps unbelievable quality to it, some sort of tall tale or urban legend at the heart of it, but nothing has changed except for the string of forwards that are at the top of it, where you can see all these people that have passed it on like a chain letter.
But if I don't forward this, I'm going to look in the mirror and see a ghost and it will kill me.
That's right, in 7 days. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astaproallergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So one of the papers I was looking at was From Storytelling to Facebook by Alberto Arcibi, published in Human Nature in 2022. This particular paper utilized a registered online pair of studies, one using a traditional transmission chain setup and the other asking subjects whether they would be likely to share a story on social media or with friends, you know, in a anonymous or attributed status.
So I thought this was really interesting. So if I'm understanding right, the author wanted to compare different types of information sharing in the modern era. One is more like the experiments we've been talking about, where somebody has to pass along a story effortfully by like using their memory to retell the story as they understand it, like in the Bartlett experiments, versus the technology-assisted passing along of a story passively in its original unaltered form. You know, you just click the button to share. So you're not actually changing it in that case. You're just deciding whether or not you want this same original piece of media to go to all of the people following you.
Yeah, yeah. So just some of the very quick sort of findings from this. First of all, negative content was both better transmitted in transmission chain experiments and shared more than its neutral counterpart.
That should not be surprising based on all the studies of what does well online. Negative content works.
Yeah. Next, threat-related information was successful in transmission chain experiments, but not when sharing straight up. So that's interesting as well. And again, kind of matches up with what we tend to understand about why we pass something on, why we would tell someone a particular story. And then finally, information eliciting disgust was not advantaged in either, which is interesting.
That's surprising to me, but okay.
I guess, some people, I guess maybe it depends on the population. Again, this was a small study, but it does seem like there would be individuals who are like, hey, I got a disgusting story I need to tell you. Listen to me. But maybe others not so much. Or maybe it's like the disgusting thing, though we might be the thing we sort of focus on, like maybe it's ultimately something about it being negative or something about it being threat related that is more important to the transmission than merely the disgust.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the author points out that content biases are strongest when memorization and reproduction are involved in the transmission of information, as in the telephone game and the traditional oral transmission of narratives. Now, another paper I was looking at pointed out some other great ideas related to this. It's titled Serial Killers, Spiders, and Cybersex, Social and Survival Information Bias in the Transmission of Urban Legends by Stubbardsfield et al., published in the British Journal of Psychology in 2014.
Okay. Oh, boy.
Yeah. It's a great time. The authors point out that when we take in information and retell it, various cognitive selection pressures kick in to make sure it's maximally transmittable. This can alter structure, it can alter content, and transmissibility depends on three factors: salience, accuracy of recall, and motivation to pass it on.
Okay, so can you explain that?
The way I was thinking about it is in terms of like, all right, you've heard a good joke, and you want to retell that joke. Why do you want to retell that joke? Is it good? Is it notable? Is it attention-grabbing in any way? Can you actually remember the beats well enough to retell it? And then why are you retelling it? Is it timely? Is it entertaining? Is it particularly cutting? Are you just trying to create a distraction, to sort of lift the mood? Mm-hmm. All of this matters without any of us having to actively check these boxes off in our head. We don't have to actually think like, all right, can I read? Because Lord knows plenty of people launch into a joke without making sure that they can actually retell all the necessary beats first. But also you're not necessarily, conscious of all of this as you're about to retell something.
Horse goes into the doctor's office, has a long face. The horse says, why is my face like this? I don't remember the rest.
Yeah. Yeah. But still, it's like if you're taking a joke or some other bit of information, if it ends with you, there's a reason. And if you pass it on, there's a reason as well. So the first and third factors here, salience and motivation, depend on social information bias and survival information bias. In other words, coming back to the joke or say an urban legend, does the thing you are passing on contain to any degree social information or survival information?
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, it's really interesting to think about this because indeed some of the memorable ideas out there, be they jokes, urban legends, or what have you, at least seem to have some sort of social revelation or commentary baked into them, and or some sort of information that seems to contain a lesson on how to survive in the world. I mean, you're not necessarily processing this. You're not thinking like, oh, this is a good urban legend. I can use this. This might save my life tomorrow. You might not be thinking that, but that could be like the reason that you're inclined to remember it.
I think a lot of the jokes that people find the funniest are ones that make a playfully negative observation about general human nature.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Classic example, the two hunters in the woods, they see a bear charging at them. One kneels down to tie his shoes. His friend says, "Why are you tying your shoes? You can't outrun a bear." The guy tying his shoes says, "I don't have to outrun a bear. I just have to outrun you."
Yeah, yeah. So there you can look to examples like this. There are also various parables and koans that really zing because they seem to reveal something about human nature. Likewise, you can also point to a lot of negative examples, things that contain disinformation or just hurtful ideas or stereotypes. But true or not, they seem to have some sort of social information. Now, on the survival information front, the first place my mind went to was the old urban legend of, hey, don't flash your lights, your car lights at another car that doesn't have its lights on because you know what's going on. This is a murder gang initiation.
Yes.
There are gang members in that car. They're intentionally riding around without their headlights on. And if you flash your lights at them, you may think you're generally reminding them that they need to turn their lights on, but no, it'll be on and they will come and kill you.
So this allegedly has survival information. You need to know this. If you don't know this, you could die.
Right. It seems to be important on some level and then gets transmitted and passed on. It, of course, completely false. This is an urban legend that began in the 1980s, has no truth to it, though at times got passed on by reputable and semi-reputable sources. But again, it seems to have survival information inside of it, and therefore there's a stickiness to it.
That makes sense. Okay.
Now, back to the paper itself. They conducted a very small study, but found, quote, legends which contain social information, social type, legends which contain survival information, survival type, and legends which contain both forms of information, combined type, were all recalled with significantly greater accuracy than control material, while social and combined type legends were recalled with significantly greater accuracy than survival type legends.
Well, counterintuitive as it may be that social and combined beats out survival, I am not really surprised by that because I don't know what is the juiciest type of information that if you hear a little snippet of, you've got to lean in and find out more. It's gossip about people. It's not, you know, it's not people talking about life-threatening situations. You might lean in and want to hear more about life-threatening situations, but even more so, it's if you hear like, oh man, did you hear what Johnny said? Like you have to hear the rest of that.
Yeah, like the whole thing about gang members driving around in cars without their lights on. There's the survival aspect of it, certainly. But there is also at least, and I didn't look at any specific examples of the text. I'm just kind of remembering it. It's at least implied that there's some sort of social information about like reckless youth culture or punk gangs, or there's some sort of racial connotation to it. That's all just kind of baked into the idea, even if there are not specific examples added in its transmission.
Yes, it like pings on a lot of different unhealthy fixations people might have.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. I would be interested to hear from listeners out there if they have other examples of the sort of like urban legend transmission. I think there's a lot to reveal in these examples.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Well, speaking of urban legends, I also wanted to talk briefly about a study I was looking at that concerned urban legends and folktales. And so this was by Ost et al., published in the journal Memory very recently in 2022. And the title was "The Serial Reproduction of an Urban Myth Revisiting Bartlett's Schema Theory." Hmm. So the title makes reference to Bartlett's schema theory. This is an idea proposed by Bartlett that memory is more accurate when it conforms to what he called our schema, meaning a sort of an existing body of knowledge and expectations that we use to help store memory efficiently and make sense of the world. And so according to this theory, not all information is distorted at the same rate. The authors write, quote, "According to the logic of Bartlett's schema theory, remembering should, in relation to certain kinds of material, be relatively reliable." And so the authors here investigate the reliability of Bartlett-style serial reproduction chains by modulating two different variables. First of all, whether the original information fits with the subject's familiar cultural schema or not, and whether the audience of their retelling was understood to be, quote, lenient or strict. And I thought both of these variables were interesting because they both came up in Bartlett's discussion of his own work. One of the things he was testing with the famous example of that story, The War of the Ghosts, which, again, this is one we discussed in episode one. This is a translated adaptation of a Native American folktale that in its original form is, we found very haunting and beautiful and interesting, but it doesn't conform to common expectations of storytelling that might be expected by a Western audience. And thus, Bartlett featured it because he thought that these differences in storytelling conventions and the subject's lack of familiarity with the cultural context of the story would make it more difficult for them to remember and reproduce it accurately. And that did seem to be the case. But here, the authors of this study wanted to actually compare that directly with a much more culturally familiar story. And in this case, they chose The Vanishing Hitchhiker. Rob, do you know The Vanishing Hitchhiker tale?
Ooh, I don't know. Is this the one with the hook?
No, not the hook. Okay. The hook is a good one, too. The Vanishing Hitchhiker, there are a lot of different variations, but usual contours are the same. So maybe there is a man driving along a lonely highway at night, and he sees a hitchhiker, a woman who appears to be in distress. She's asking for a ride, walking on the side of the highway. She asks him for a ride. He picks her up. They have a brief conversation as he drives her to the address she asks for. And then when he arrives, he turns to find she has vanished entirely from the car. And then he later often compares his story with somebody else. He tells this, you know, he's like, he gets home and says, you wouldn't believe it. I picked up this woman to give her a ride home and then she disappeared completely. And then the person he's talking to says, I've driven her home as well. She also disappeared from my car.
Oh, nice, nice, nice. So this is like an automobile age sort of take on the classic ghost story where you find out after the fact that this mysterious person who vanished is a frequently occurring ghost.
Exactly. Now, it might have earlier analogs, but I think most people would interpret this as like a 20th century folktale.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Clearly involves the car, the hitchhiker. It's new for a new age.
So the authors of this study, first they did a pilot study to compare these two stories, The War of the Ghosts and The Vanishing Hitchhiker, to determine how schema-friendly these two stories were in the cultural setting of the experiment, which was 21st century college undergrads, I believe in the UK. So again, always testing with the college students. But okay, mm-hmm. You at least want to find out among the general population that is being tested in this study, how familiar would these two different types of stories be? And familiarity here doesn't just mean like, have you heard this story before? They measured it along a bunch of different variables. And those variables were familiarity of the setting, what the readers perceive to be the logical structure, the clarity of the structure, how understandable the events in the story were, and how conventional the language was. So I think this is generally a good way of approaching it, finding a bunch of different ways of scoring, like when a person in the study encounters a particular story, how out of their element do they feel? And perhaps not surprisingly, participants here rated The Vanishing Hitchhiker as much more familiar along these dimensions than The War of the Ghosts. No surprise there. And so they tried to do the serial reproduction experiments, like Bartlett did, with these two different stories. And in line with their hypothesis, they found that while participants in the experimental portion of the study came up with enormous distortions while attempting to transmit The War of the Ghosts, they produced comparatively very accurate copies from memory of The Vanishing Hitchhiker. And I thought that was very interesting. It would seem to validate some part of the schema theory, the idea that stories that fit more in the box of our cultural expectations are remembered and preserved more accurately and more easily than stories that somehow don't fit our expectations or don't behave in familiar ways that are easy for us to understand.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I also can't help but think that like the basic hitchhiker scenario, the experience of picking up a hitchhiker, I guess it's something that a lot of people have never done this, maybe even more so today. But you've seen it in movies, heard it in stories. So the basic scenario is pretty much like culturally intact. And then this is a supernatural twist on that, I guess it doesn't particularly have survival information or social information to go back to that earlier study. I mean, it's not implied that the ghost is harmful, but it's like there's something about the everyday quality of it, like you're saying, like it's very relatable. It's relatable to this reality of modern life.
So this is totally a tangent off of what we're talking about, but I would almost say that there is somehow implied social and survival information in any ghost story, even though it's hard to express what that social or survival information is. It might have something to do with proof of the afterlife, something about life after death, and the experience of any ghost has some kind of inherent survival type value to us. And ghosts are usually understood to have some kind of message to the living, which has a kind of gossip or social information quality to it. At least that's my take.
Yeah. And I guess you could also make an argument that the hitchhiker was not what they seemed. They were a ghost. This is basically just a supernatural twist on the hitchhiker was not what they seemed, which could arguably have survival and social commentary within it.
Right.
In a more mundane way, like, that there's some sort of criminal threat there or something, or some sort of unknown that one should be wary of. And this is just taking a mundane threat and transforming it into a supernatural threat on some level. Because you don't want a ghost in your car. You don't know what's going to happen.
They might get ectoplasm on your passenger seat.
Yeah, they might scare you. I mean, we've all heard enough ghost stories that don't involve automobiles to know it can go any number of ways. Your hitchhiker vanishes, you finally pull over the gas station, and then bam, hook on the outside handle of the car.
That's a good twist. At first, it's a ghost, she vanishes, but then she reappears with a hook.
Yeah.
Okay, but here's another interesting twist on what they found in this study. So remember, the first variable was, does familiarity with the story, whether the story fits in the box of your cultural expectations, does that affect how well you can remember and transmit it? Answer is yes, it does. If the story fits in the box, it's easier for you to remember and transmit it. The other thing is, does the implied audience of the story matter? They were testing the hypothesis that a listener understood as strict in terms of expecting accuracy would produce more accurate recall than one understood as lenient. So the way they did this was, on one hand, they said, okay, reproduce this story for a friend. Here's the story for you to memorize. Now you need to reproduce it and tell it to a friend. Second option is reproduce this and tell it to a police officer.
Well, that changes a lot.
Yes. And they found this did indeed matter for one type of story more than the other. So they say recall was better for a strict audience than a lenient audience. People did remember better when talking to the cop, but this only really applied to one of the stories. So recall was more accurate when talking to the cop for the familiar story, the vanishing hitchhiker. But recall seemed to be equally bad for the War of the Ghosts. The having a strict cop listening to your recounting did not really improve recall for the story that was more difficult to remember anyway. Which, I don't know, I guess you could interpret that multiple ways, but that makes me wonder if, well, when you're talking to a friend, it signals you're probably just not putting that much effort into being strictly accurate in reproducing a story, even when in cases when you could be. So the case with the familiar story that's easier to reproduce. But when you're trying to reproduce an unfamiliar story that doesn't really fit with your schema, it is it's sort of impossible to do, even if you're putting that extra effort in.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in speaking to a police officer about your ghost story, like something about it should be actionable, right? Even if it's not a ghost story, like if you're telling a police officer about it, it must be because you want the police to do something. And therefore that, I guess, could impact your attention to details and so forth.
But anyway, at the end today, I wanted to come back to something we talked about earlier in the episode, which is emphasize my feeling that there are two sides to the coin and they're both true. One is that serial reproduction of information between people, information passing along the grapevine between people, should not be relied upon as representing what that information was accurately at the beginning. You just should not trust that. And at the same time, you should not think about serial reproduction or transmission chains as they occur in human culture as bad. It's part of what culture is, and it provides a lot of good things. It provides a lot of the entertainment and the learning and the spice of life, even if it does not objectively accurately usually preserve the information from the beginning of the chain.
See, this is all great stuff that I think should have been included in the elementary school telephone games that so many of us play.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it kind of is all there. Like, the game... You recognize that the message doesn't make it to the end intact, so you get a lesson there, like, oh, don't believe everything you hear. But also, the game is fun, and the fun comes from the failure.
Fail and distort. This is how you amuse yourself. This is the lesson of the telephone game. I kid, but it is really revealing. Like I said, I just didn't think about it much when I was a kid playing this game. But when looking at these studies and discussing, how it affects the transmission of rumors and myths and legends, urban legends, et cetera. It really gets fascinating.
Another thing I was thinking about was how when we talk about rumors, I feel like we still often have an understanding of this being entirely word of mouth, just like one person talking to another and then that person talking to the next person. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me the much more common route of rumors today involves some kind of media in between there. So it may go like a word of mouth from one person to the next, and then to the internet, to a written form, and then somebody reading that piece of information on the internet and then telling somebody in person, and then them posting on the internet and reading it. So you're also having these media changes back and forth that are not really showing up quite so much in at least any of the experiments we've looked at, because all of them either went, you know, they either go entirely oral or entirely text-based.
Yeah, that's a good point. I should also just remind everyone, probably don't go to the police with your ghost story. I'm just saying, there may be exceptions to that rule. You know, use your best judgment. But it's also hard for me to get past that idea of just like, I think I saw a ghost, I better call the police.
I disagree. I think you should only call the police with your ghost story.
Agree to disagree.
I'm kidding. Do not call 911 and tie up the phone lines with your ghost story.
Yes, tell a friend. Tell a close friend. All right, we're going to go ahead and close out this episode, but we'll be back on Tuesday. So, you know, hey, keep writing into us, because on Mondays we do listener mail, and then we do our core episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. On Wednesdays we do a short form Monster Fact or Artifact episode, and Fridays we set aside Most Serious Concerns to just talk about a weird film on Weird House Cinema.
Huge thanks to our audio producer, JJ Posway. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.